Welcome to the January 12th edition of Irish Illustrated Insider. I'm Tim O'Malley, joined by Drew Mentock of Irish Illustrated, along with some advanced information, courtesy Tom Loy and Eric Thomas, and that clandestine collection known as Sources, Drew Mentock. Well, Notre Dame football welcomed, I think, 25 freshmen on campus this weekend to the program. Far cry from the days of James Aldridge, George West, and Chris Stewart, who trailblazed this early enrollee. But Drew, people don't want to hear about that because it's portal season, the most glorious time of the year on Notre Dame message boards for a select few. And today's Notre Dame portal efforts have come to fruition. Four signees, and we do expect more. Why don't we start with your thoughts on the guy that we thought was in last week, Colorado cornerback DJ McKinney, since you had that story.
Yeah, as you mentioned, DJ, it kind of sounds like it was in the portal for a second, then it was rescinded, but we always expected him still to end up with Notre Dame. He's a guy, he's been a two-year starter at Colorado, started opposite Travis Hunter last year, had a pretty good season last year. Definitely stepped back this year once he kind of was expected to become the man, but he's a guy with a lot of talent. Before this season, people were thinking he could be a potential first or second round draft pick. Things definitely didn't go that way this season. His numbers dropped across the board, including, I think, your Pro Football Focus has him as 20 missed tackles. Regardless, it's an interesting take because I think he, over the last two seasons, has over 1,200 seasons playing outside a corner and less than 100 playing slot. And that's obviously the position in need. So I'm kind of curious if that's a position where Coach Mickens thinks he can get a lot out of him there, or if that gives him more fluidity with the two other outside corners, or what the plan is there. But this is a guy with a lot of potential. I'm just curious how he fits in with Christian Gray and Leonard Moore.
And we discussed that last week when we were trying to get the story up, and all of a sudden the story wasn't going to go up because he wasn't 100% signed. Jaden Sanders from Michigan, Drew, also signed with Notre Dame today. Fresh going into his sophomore season, also an outside corner. I think yes. Spot on, though. I think Coach Mickens sees a potential nickel in here. And then obviously a heavier rotation at corner. Let's just say this quickly. Christian Gray played too many snaps last year. Now you don't have to have Christian Gray play too many snaps. I mean, if Leonard Moore hurts his ankle again, you have Moore behind him. They have great young freshmen and sophomore corners, but now you have veterans. I do think someone's getting converted to nickel from that group, though, and I don't think it's Christian Gray.
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. And I also think the Sanders makes more sense to me because he has 3 years of eligibility, and regardless, you shouldn't expect to have Gray, McKinney, or Leonard Moore on your roster after this season. So having a guy who you can kind of develop, and that gives them three really promising corners in that class. And they, you know, especially after losing Creed Thomas, who from what I saw last year, I liked, but then obviously he got beat out pretty quickly when Stallus Golden and Mark Zachary got on campus. But there, I think it's interesting too. Colorado has kind of seen it as Notre Dame traded Creed Thomas for McKinney, but I kind of see the replacement for Creed Thomas as Sanders.
Yeah, and it's also in this situation, Dallas Golden could be a nickel, but Dallas Golden only played nickel last year because they got desperate. Carson Hobbs had been benched and fell way out of favor. Devonta Smith got injured. You needed someone, Dallas Golden or Mark Zachary. Dallas Golden, a little more sturdily built. Remember, he wasn't a planned nickel because he didn't play a snap of nickel, according to Dallas Golden, until the week he started at nickel, which is a remarkable achievement by him, a remarkable feat, because that's the hardest cornerback position to play. So even if you like Dallas Golden at nickel, that's maybe more of your, it's 3rd and 11. We love Dallas Golden in this nickel spot, where the veteran, you remember, they start a nickel. You start a nickel. That's right. What football is. That's what pro football is now, but that's what college football really is.
So yeah, and I think
these guys are coming in, yeah.
Yeah, and with Dallas Golden, he's a guy you can put anywhere, too. So
that's true.
Bringing him up a little bit. I mean, I think he landed there because they're like, well, he's going to, we have a guy who's out there who's going to get beat. At least let's have somebody who can make plays too. So he kind of balances out a little bit more there. He's going to get his hand on the ball a lot more than what we saw from Carson Hopp. So I think freeing him up, I mean, he could even be a safety at some point down the road. I don't think that's what you want him to, but he is the guy with the talent that he could play all five positions in the secondary if you wanted him to.
We did bury the lead because the one thing Notre Dame did not 100% absolutely need in this portal was cornerbacks. They got two of them. But Quincy Porter, former five-star top 100 wide receiver, Ohio State. Bergen Catholic, true boundary frame at 6'4", I think 210, 215. And this part's funny. He has 4 years to continue to play college football, which would kind of be strange if he ends up being a really good player. But Quincy Porter, huge addition for Notre Dame and a position of need.
Yeah, definitely. And I think in Priester's film breakdown, he also noted he has a 6'9 wingspan. So just a guy with really long arms, really a lot of talent. So in addition to just him already being a tall, long athlete, I think he brings a lot there. And I think it's interesting to note, while he didn't, I think he only had 59 yards last year, redshirted, as you mentioned, Carnell Tate and Jeremiah Smith played 570 yards outside last year, or 570 snaps outside last year, and only a little less than 100 in the snaps. So when you have those two guys taking most of the outside reps, you're not going to play a freshman. You're going to save his red shirt because you clearly don't need him. So while I think there's still development that he's going to need, he's definitely a guy who you understand why he didn't play a lot. It doesn't mean he's a miss as a former five-star.
Right. And speaking of not misses, we don't know about Mylon Graham, but Tom Loy, 24/7 Sports, Irish Illustrated, his sources, my sources from a couple of weeks ago that started on this, we both kind of remain hopeful that Mylon Graham will end up at Notre Dame. He's not part of today's bonanza that we're going to continue here, but Mylon Graham, previous relationship, Fort Wayne with Tay Johnson, good relationship with Marcus Freeman. There's a lot of ties there. I mean, Graham and Porter would be you say you don't need two corners. You did need two receivers, and that would be a knock out of the park on the two receivers, but we're just going to kind of wait and see on that one because I guess it does, you know, as of this morning, didn't look as good, looking better now, but it's just one of those situations where anytime you go from looks great to doesn't look as good to looks good to looks great to doesn't look as good, we're going to pause for 1 second on that one for Mylon Graham. But guy that used to be in that position, Drew Mentuck, Keon Keeley, former Notre Dame pledge, always looked great. Then it looked really bad, and then he was gone. But Keon Keeley coming back from Alabama, 2 years of eligibility remaining.
Yeah, I think you guys talked about this last week a little too. Just having Trey Reader on staff and having that connection still here seems significant. But I mean, it's definitely, you know, especially after losing Josh Burnham to the portal, like he's a big frame defensive end. I know he hasn't necessarily lived up to I think he was a top rated defensive player in his recruiting class, but he was at least starting to come on late in his career. He had a sack against Oklahoma in the playoffs, Georgia in the SEC championship game. So you at least started to see, as he started to play more this year, he started to seem like he was coming on. And I don't think it was another player that Alabama wanted to lose, but has a lot of potential. And maybe him not hitting right away at Alabama is going to be to Notre Dame's benefit. And maybe it was better that they didn't get him right away in the long run.
Notre Dame in on Alabama defensive tackle. Defensive lineman, but defensive tackle James Smith still trying hard. According to Tom Loy, though, Notre Dame's a little less optimistic here. He and his teammate, Roussa, are, for all intents and purposes, a package deal. My point all along was maybe you can separate that package deal because they're making very, very grown-up decisions at this point in their lives for football. But if they are a package deal, it'd be tougher to get them both. I think Notre Dame's a lot more hopeful and maybe more all-in on James Smith in this situation. At least that's the recent tea leaves. And Loy had some really good information. I should mention on the Irish Illustrated message board, if you go there, it's going to be pinned all day long. But Tom Loy came in this morning with a pretty good run. I mean, a pretty extensive rundown. It said a couple of portal notes. There's a lot more than a couple of portal notes on there for anybody listening. If they want to head out to irishillustrated.com, I'm doing my Tim Priester imitation now by sending you to our website to subscribe and enjoy.
Yeah, I think Smith he's the better player. I think he's the number one defensive tackle in the transfer portal, according to 24/7 Sports. He's also, it's more of a position in need. They already got the more, I think, I mean, there are other ones also a really promising athlete, but I think if you're going to, you know, you want Keeley out of the defensive end spot, he fits more with what they need this year too. So I think you already got that wrapped up, but if you can get Smith, that would be huge. But it sounds like Tennessee's, you know, pretty big player there, and that might be tough. And I think they were both high school teammates, and that's, so they've been connected for, you know, playing together for 8 years, and they just want to continue that. But it would be huge. It would be probably the most significant pickup of the transfer portal cycle if Notre Dame is able to get Smith.
Yeah, and if not, Mylon Graham is another significant pickup. Francis Brew, who has, of course, the previous relationship with Partridge, Notre Dame's new defensive line coach. We thought Brew might be fully in. We still think hopeful, I believe. Notre Dame is hopeful that Brew will be in. Doesn't matter what we think. Notre Dame is hopeful that Brew will be in. I keep saying like what we think, but it's probably better to say what Notre Dame thinks since we have some information there. But I do believe that he will eventually sign with Notre Dame. And they'll also eventually, we can skip this for now because we don't know who it's going to be. They'll sign a kicker, Drew Mentuck. So we don't need to take a question in segment two on kickers because they will get a kicker. And we'll talk about the kicker when they get that kicker.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, I mean, Brew, I mean, yeah, we'll see it. Given how this transfer portal cycle has gone, I agree. Until you see an announcement from Notre Dame to confirm somebody's signed, I think there's reason to be a little patient and slightly skeptical. But yeah, there's a lot of reason to feel optimistic there. And they need defensive tackles. That was the number one and number two positions of need coming into this portal. So they, I mean, retaining Armel Mukum, who I know we'll touch on soon, is big, but you can't just do that. You need to add some bodies. And he's a guy who would have 2 years of eligibility left, played a lot for a good defensive line, has that connection to Partridge, as you mentioned, who recruited him. I don't think he ever coached him at Pitt, but like they go back and that's a guy, somebody who could conceivably get even more out of him this year.
I had two notes passed along from different sources. So I'm not ascribing this to Loy because I've been talking about Tom Loy and Eric Thomas a lot on this. So it's not from those guys, but two notes passed along. Quarterback, ND, probably not going to take one unless they can find someone that really fits the offense or maybe fits the offense a little with very good athletic ability. In other words, if you have to go to someone besides CJ Carr, you're not just getting a very poor version of CJ Carr. So it would be a little bit different with the athleticism. Or, you know, a preferred walk-on who's happy to contribute as a career backup, because you have to, you know, when you have Blake Hebert, Grubbs, and Gerard in a two-class span, no matter what, all three aren't going to be there 1 year from now. You know, it doesn't mean they're not going to be there this portal year, but you're not keeping all those guys hanging out, three quarterbacks in a two-class span. So the preferred walk-on does make some sense. It's just that small needle to thread, right? The quarterback that wants to come behind CJ, sit behind CJ Carr.
Yeah, and I think the athleticism is a good point, because I think even last year, if Buckner and if Carr and Minshew went down, Buckner would have been the guy, especially in that game, to come in, because there's a little bit more different things you can do with that athleticism, and you know there's a level of comfort in that environment, which, I mean, Blake Hebert didn't really get much of that last year. So I think having a guy who can come in a pinch and maybe down, you know, if Carr got hurt in a game, that might be who you brought in, and then you could start getting Hebert, whoever else ready to go later. But that's not somebody you're going to want to put in right away, potentially.
I don't know how this number changes if they get Brew and Graham. I wasn't clear on it, but the source also mentioned he thinks there could be five more total targets. Not that they're going to get all five more, but there's five more total targets. Now, I'll try to clarify for the board, because we put our notes on the message board now, Andrew Mentok and Jack Freeman on this podcast. People like to read what we say too. So when that happens, I will figure out if four to six more meant including those two, because that would be a lot more. And there's going to be a preferred walk-on or two in here, because you need veteran preferred walk-ons for depth when the likes of Bodie Cahoon, and we have a question on this later, but you need preferred walk-ons for depth too. So I assume there'll be a little bit of that kind of near the end of the portal season.
Yeah, and it's worth noting just the portal closes on the 16th, but I mean, and obviously can't, or school is already going to be underway, but they just have to enter by then. They could still sign with the school after that fact. You just have to put your name in there to be there. So just because we're coming up on that date doesn't mean Notre Dame would be out of time for that type of player, especially.
Yeah. And I had a non-Notre Dame professor text me. He's a podcast listener. Shout out. I won't say his name because maybe I'm not supposed to. Shout out to the man that gave me this information. If you start school on the 12th, because of add, drop, and starting classes, you can actually enroll on the 19th still. Especially easy for a graduate student because there's not as many classes to get into. It's probably hard for an incoming freshman or in a situation. So if it was like Quincy Porter, yeah, would be in trouble if it was the 22nd or something along those lines, because he needs to get in a full cycle of classes. But that's good news also for kind of extending the period a little bit. Drew, you mentioned Armel Mukum. That was the big news last week. until Notre Dame started getting actual portal entries, it was Armel Mukum leaving a depleted defensive tackle unit, which is what I think was a source of consternation on the message board. Well, now he is coming back. And that makes, I'll let you speak on Mukum here, that makes 102 roster members, including some of the former walk-ons, because walk-ons really don't, they're all part of the roster now, the scholarship. So the 102 members of walk-ons and scholarship players and portal members that did not walk on senior day, because we assume those guys are still leaving, even though they don't all have to announce like Leo Scheidler did. But I think you know Eddie Davis. He has a question for Mukum, and I'll get you this one. Where does Armel Mukum entering the portal rank in terms of important developments? A. B. Where does Armel Mukum exiting the portal rank in terms of important developments? And either, in other words, does it change your mind a little bit?
Honestly, I wouldn't have thought so when he entered the portal. Like, I think if somebody already would have preferred to stay, but I didn't think it was that huge of a deal. But kind of where we are in the portal cycle and the fact that we only have one defensive tackle, we definitely feel good about them getting. I think it's a more significant development than I would have thought. I think it's still more important on the players that they've gotten signed so far, except for, I mean, I guess they didn't need two corners, so it's probably more significant than that. So, I mean, the wide receivers are more important. Getting through, or at least a comparable defensive tackle in the class, is significant. And then getting, I mean, you needed that, those bodies. And while he hasn't lived up to the, I feel like for the last 2 years, he's been on the cusp, according to the coaches, of playing more, and still really hasn't.
Yeah.
But at least he's a talented enough player with decent size. I think he's around 300 pounds that could be significant next year, especially when that position is the biggest question mark on the roster right now.
I kind of went glass half empty. Is that what I'm trying to say? Glass half empty. I'm not caring if Mookum left when people cared. I'll go glass half full now. Everything you said, 60 snaps last year, even though only two were high leverage, really, Miami. 60 snaps the year before, going into his senior year, looks great. Like, he's clearly a dedicated workout warrior.
Mm-hmm.
He's been coached by Al Washington. He's going to get coached by Partridge. He's a better guy to have back for your depth piece, rotational sixth guy. Maybe he gets as good to be the fifth guy. You never know. Like, that's what people were saying even last year, and he didn't make it there. But that's probably better to have that, the what you know, besides other than what you're trying to find out. I think it's good that he came back, and I will soften on my stance. I just thought it was crazy that everybody's like, we lost Armando Mookum, now we can't possibly win a national title. That was what I was pushing back against. Like, you got to live with those things in this era, but it is good to have him back for such a reason. Before we wrap up segment one, there was this is off topic in the transfer portal. Police report filed against Marcus Freeman. South Bend Tribune's Austin Huff brought this to people's attention. It happens an incident actually back on January 3rd. But from the South Bend Tribune, the alleged incident involved Freeman and a New Prairie High School wrestling assistant coach, Chris Flieger. Both were at the Al Smith Wrestling Invitational. Freeman there to support his son, Vinny, a Penn senior. And Flieger was coaching New Prairie. Well, Vinny lost, not to someone from New Prairie, but to someone from Hanover Central, a wrestler there. We don't need to name his name because he has absolutely nothing to do with this. But Flieger filed a police report to Mishawaka at the event, accusing Freeman of battery. So Mishawaka police investigated and turned over the completed report to the prosecutor's office to determine if any charges will be filed. We have an update on this already, but I'm going to read Notre Dame's statement. Actually, we don't even need to read Notre Dame's statement. How about I read the update? No charges will be filed, we have been told. So no charges will be filed against Freeman. I'm going to let you talk first, Drew, because I might go off a little bit on the nature of such police reports.
Yeah, I mean, I think police reports are just, that's something this New Prairie wrestling coach requested to have done then. That doesn't mean it's official. Obviously, now we know there's no charges being filed. This is something that the St. Joe County prosecutor's office would have had to look into. And I don't know all the details of what that process is, but it sounds like they came to that conclusion relatively quickly. And you can say this happened on the 3rd. A week later, they decided they're not going to do anything. So there was video evidence involved too. So it's not just them having to interview all their parents and stuff there. They would have had evidence to view what this gentleman claimed to have happened. But I think, again, nothing was charged. It didn't even get that far. It's just a police report, which somebody requested to be filed, and then the police officer had to file it. So
it is official. No charges. That actually happened at the beginning of this podcast. I put it on the message board first, so people on the message board saw that before we said it on the podcast, but it did happen during our podcast. I do want to point some stuff out here. Okay. Be succinct, because Coach Freeman's accuser is, from all sources I talked to in the last 48 hours when this started making its way back to us, the mendacious sort. He doesn't know what that word means, but he can look it up. Who yells at a high school kid when he loses a match walking by? And who yells at a high school kid when you're supposed to be a coach or an educator at a school? And who does that when your team has nothing to do with it? It is absolutely ridiculous. The texts I got from people were short man syndrome, huge axe to grind with Penn due to eligibility and other things, a long history of issues in the New Prairie school system regarding that. But I want to say one thing, and we know about spurious battery complaints in this world. This is one of them. If you know, you know, you're laughing now. 99% of America did not know Chris Flieger. No one knew about him. Now he's making himself known for the wrong reasons, because this is ridiculous to file a police report in this situation. I guess he didn't know there was video.
And in my understanding too, with police reports, is you can always file them the next day or something. So I think, I don't know what he's thinking at this point, but it conceivably could have waited for him to cool down when clearly he was involved in a very heated situation, regardless of his conduct, and could have waited and done this later if he still felt the need to do it, but he had already done it. And I believe the South Bend Tribune requested that police report and got it. And that's why the story came out. But yeah, that might be something that he is potentially regretting today.
We will have no spurious police reports or any other such things on segment two. Coming back soon, burning up the boards. With the NFL playoffs in full swing, I've been looking to find the best deal on tickets, both for family and friends, but also as a memorable gift idea. That's why I want to offer the sponsor of today's Burning Up the Boards, SeatGeek, a huge shout out. With over 35 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one rated ticketing app. There are more than 70,000 events listed on SeatGeek, including concerts, sports, festivals, and more. So whether you're an Irish fan looking for a ticket to the AC/DC concert in September, or a Bears or 49er fan looking for a playoff matchup coming up down the road, maybe 1, 2, or 3, SeatGeek has your back. Each ticket is rated on a scale of 1 to 10, so you know you're getting a good deal. Look for the green dots. Green means good, red means bad, but every ticket is backed by their buyer guarantee. And of course, I have a code for you guys. You can use Irish10, that's all capital letters on the number 10, for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. 10% off any tickets with promo code Irish10. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later. Thank you, SeatGeek. Our first question in segment two, and I will apologize to anyone watching because our text chain is getting blown up with some news. Going to pose this to you anyway, though, Drew. Kiwi Country. How does the pursuit of not one but two receivers impact a guy like Jaden Greathouse? What about someone like Elijah Burris or Cam Williams? And by impact, I of course mean the portal is still open.
Well, I think they had an idea that Notre Dame was going to go after one or two receivers once the portal opened. I think if I'm them, the bigger news is that KK Smith left because he was their fourth leading receiver last year. And then two of the other top three, and Pauline and Fields are also gone. And those are both guys who, when they came in, had 800 yards receiving seasons to their name. Whereas, you know, if they get Porter and Graham, for instance, those are guys who, while are super talented, they're both younger and don't have a lot of experience. So if you're those guys, I think you're like, well, I can at least have more of an opportunity to compete with those guys because they're not as established too. So I don't think it's going to be that significant. I don't expect, because of that news, you're going to suddenly see those departures, in part because there is a lot of room for guys to come in, even with Greathouse, you know, potentially being healthy next year and bigger part of the rotation. You have Jordan Faison, and then no one else left really contributed from a receiving perspective that much last year.
I will point out, people have asked about, like, well, you know, what's Jaden Greathouse think of this? For a guy like Greathouse, it's different than others. You'd say, Jaden, we want you back. Probably don't take anything away from his NIL, even though he played four games and redshirted, and it was a huge NIL earned from the Ohio State and Penn State games. So you don't really insult him, I wouldn't think, but we want you back. We want you at this relative price. We are going after receivers in the portal. And when he signs, he signs. I mean, I don't think it affects you that much. When you sign, you sign. Obviously, there's examples where you can get out of it, but I think Notre Dame's a little better at that than others. So I don't think it affects Greathouse. I think, you know, Elijah Burris could be a really good player and could force his way into the rotation, whether they get both Porter or Graham. If they get Porter, I think Burris is automatic. He will be in the rotation. But you just can't worry about these things. I mean, you need to make your team better. I say it all the time as a joke. It's not happy camp, but it's really not happy camp. I mean, you absolutely, as long as you're honest with them, you tell Elijah, here's the deal. We really like your potential. Here's a bump in your NIL. We're bringing in some receivers, though. Go compete. That's all you can do. And I think that's what Freeman does.
Right, and I think you can sell the fact that, I mean, this could be CJ Carr's last year, and the offense is probably going to pass the ball more too. So even you look at the reps that went out the door from those other receivers, over 1,000 yards, you know, over 50 catches and 12 or 13 touchdowns, like there might be even more out there to gain, even regardless of what those production went out the door to. So I think that's helpful. Our next question is from Terry Benedict. Are we over-talking about how much they're missing on the portal? Also, are we under-talking about how well they did in retaining key pieces that asked for a pay raise?
Yes, but I get it, because it was the process that was poor that I think Notre Dame will reevaluate. Fans, of course, it's day 10. It's day 10 of the portal. The announcements came out today. You can have faith and patience, but it's day 10 of the portal, and there were so many targets mentioned and missed, and now... maybe they had not missed. what they have re-signed is incredible. They lost Josh Burnham. He's good. I've written twice they're going to miss him a little bit. They brought in Keon Keeley. As long as they get two defensive tackles, it looks like they're going to get one. I mean, it looks like they're going to get one soon. They have to get another one. They have a $4 million starting secondary that has nothing to do with the two corners they brought in or Zachary and Golden. They retain Sneed, Osbury, Faremo, and KVA at linebacker. I mean, they did great. Great House is back. Aeneas Williams is back. Kenny Minchie obviously is a loss, but there was no chance to retain. So they really just lost Burnham. If no one thought Kenny Minchie was coming back, and he shouldn't have come back because he's too good to back up someone. You can't overstate enough how great Notre Dame did in retention, Drew. It was fantastic.
Yeah, the only ones you could say they potentially, other ones they lost out on are, I mean, Billy Shrouth. That's probably
Pro. But
Yeah, they couldn't retain him and he wanted to go pursue an NFL opportunity. But that's probably it if we're looking at it from that perspective. But yeah, I mean, Ohio State, who has multiple receivers going in the portal, you know, a team that I know they lost Brian Hartline, but yeah, it could be, as you mentioned, a lot worse than Josh Burnham. Even top programs are losing more than that.
Yeah, so I think Notre Dame did well. Obviously, getting Brew, Graham, guys along that line everybody will forget this except for the people that covered it and wrote about it, how long it took if it happens. So. Next question from Irish 945. Considering the losses of Love and Price, does Notre Dame have enough big play potential to win a national championship in 2026? Which three players in order, I didn't realize that, do you predict will end the season with the most plays of 30 plus yards? I think 30 plus is interesting because that's not 60 plus.
Yeah, I think, so I looked it up. I think they could be, so it's not usually running backs that do exceptionally well in gains over 30 yards. Like Love had 10 last year and he ranked tied for 14th and there were only two running backs ahead of him. The rest were wide receivers. So I think if you want a more explosive offense, you have the type of quarterback you want for that type of thing in CJ Carr. So it's which three receivers and maybe you would get, I mean, we still saw Aeneas Williams break out. So I'll go with Jordan Faison number one. I'm just going to throw out Porter two. I don't know how much he'll actually play, but he has the potential to do that. And then Aeneas Williams three.
Because it's 30 yards, I'm going to go with Aeneas Williams one.
Okay.
I do believe they kind of swung in the portal and didn't get there. So I think there's no one coming in that's better than Aeneas Williams. Aeneas Williams will be one. If this said 60 yards, I would not say that. And I don't know who goes 60 yards besides Price and Love to answer the question. Yes. But 30 yards, I'll go Aeneas one, Faison two. I'll say if they get him, Mylon Graham. Okay. Aeneas one, if they get him, Mylon Graham two, and Faison three. If they don't get Graham, I will actually go with Great House three. I got to take my own advice. And when you think someone's really good and something goes wrong one year, you don't completely bag on them. I think if Notre Dame didn't think he was really good, they no way would have brought him back for whatever. If he was in the 700,000 range last year, he's not taking a massive pay cut. He could go anywhere else and make that money because that's how the portal works. Notre Dame must really like Jaden Greathouse. So I'm just going to go Aeneas Faison Greathouse. If Mylon Graham makes it here, he jumps into that somewhere. Next question from Kay Beasley. Oh, actually, Drew, why don't you read this one? Because I did talk to somebody about this yesterday. My bad.
Okay. No, you're good. From Kay Beasley, do the portal results and the growing cost of obtaining talent make you think that ND will try and massively oversign this year in high school recruiting, especially for defensive tackle and maybe wide receivers? Also from TMR Irish, with the number of players that have exited this year, both through the portal and the draft and graduation, without knowing the numbers of those coming in, how does the team get to 105?
So really interesting point. We'll handle the second part first, the 105. We've said it on a lot of podcasts, but I think it's very confusing for people. When Notre Dame had 114 people last year and the vote from the NCAA passed that, we get so many texts on this thread when we're doing this. This is incredible. I might have to turn off my text, Jack Freeman. When that vote passed, Notre Dame had 113, 114 players. I don't remember. They were able to grandfather them all in like every school was. So the point, though, that Notre Dame, I believe, did, this is off the record, but I believe they did it. They did not designate guys that were leaving, seniors, graduate students. They designated young players. Total example here, probably wasn't, I don't even know if it was him or not, but if he's a young walk-on, remember, a guy like Matt Jeffrey could be designated and as the exception, like the guy you were going to cut, even though you weren't going to, and he has three more years. Whereas if you designated Tyler Buchner and he had no time left. That was not smart of you if you're a program because you lost your designation. So Notre Dame can be over 105 by whatever the number of designations they have is. Random guess, people always ask, I don't know, 108, 109. It's not going to be 113, 114, but it's going to be over 105 if they want it to be. The first part, really interesting thing. I think the oversigning thing is really interesting. I first took this as 29 guys came in, all right? Notre Dame really pushed their spring roster here because they care about players graduating too. So let's say someone's transferring out, but they want to graduate from Notre Dame. It can affect your numbers. So like if Notre Dame goes over even the limit of whatever, you know, let's say that their limit at 108 is 108 because they grandfathered in three that are left. Bringing in like 30 guys next year probably can't happen because you're going to screw over someone that's trying to stay in school to graduate that might not be on your, basically it's not as easy as you think. Like you can't have that many people on your roster even when the spring semester starts. So that's something I never thought of until someone offered it to me yesterday. Like totally in passing, this fell into my lap, Kay Beasley. Can't believe you asked the question. I didn't even ask the question of him and he offered that to me. So you can't oversign wildly because your numbers do matter going into this semester. Kind of strange, kind of, I'm sure we have to explain this again. I'm not sure of how well I did, but that's part of it.
Yeah, the only thing I'll add to that is that if Notre Dame can oversign a defensive tackle, because that's a position they've struggled at recruiting well for the last several years, then they will probably do that. But to your point, I don't know that you'll necessarily see a class with 29 or 30 guys coming in. And then a second part here is, are those additional walk-ons and or more portal options? Although the guys that left were not all starters on the two deep, there were special team and scout team members. Also, does this year include another portal timeframe after spring ball?
It only includes a portal timeframe after spring ball for a head coach that leaves. So if Ryan Day leaves Ohio State, all of those players could go in the portal. So I think my understanding is Notre Dame will sign Jeremiah Smith at that point, which is a good idea for them to do. So no, I'm kidding on that last part. But if a coach leaves a program in the spring, the players on that team have an exceptionally short window to enter the portal, which is very fair. And also, I'm pretty surprised that the NCAA did that for them. But that the second portal window now is that rare thing where a coach leaves in the spring. In terms of walk-ons, if you're preferred walk-oning, you can bring one on, but you can't go over the number. Like, It's all part of your number. Notre Dame got in a little jam this year in August. Marcus Freeman said this on the press conference. They had 105 guys, more than that with the grandfathering in. They could not bring on a kicker because of that. Like if all their kickers got hurt, they literally could not have taken a kicker from one of the dorm teams or from the soccer team. Dorm teams is a long time ago. From the soccer team because they were at the number. So the numbers are impacted there. Notre Dame will always enter a season now one under whatever they can in case they need to bring on someone. I mean, you don't expect to do that too often, Drew, but they literally could not entertain a soccer kicker this season.
Right.
Next question from Bryce's Burner. All right, this is a pretty good question. I'll let you run it down, Drew. Scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most confident. Rank your confidence in Notre Dame's chances to win a national championship in 2026 at the times of the dates I listed, and a hint is his dates are intentional. So scale of 1 to 10, December 6, 2025. So they had not announced the playoff yet.
So is my confidence the highest it could be, or?
Yeah, if you, December 6th, way back on December 6th, Notre Dame was set to go to the playoff, but someone said to you, hey, do you think Notre Dame can win the national title in 2026 next year? Nothing bad had happened to the program. Were you 10? Were you 5? Were you 8? Were you 2? Where were you?
So a 10 is, I think they will win it next year. Yes, like I'm confident. Okay. Just great. I think on the 6, I would go with a 6. And that was me thinking they were still going to get some potential playoff experience for this group too.
All right. How about on January 2nd when everything looked a little different?
I will go with a 5.
January 12th, before you knew about this bonanza. Let's say this bonanza never happened to portal guys, and all all the good news we're getting on text chains are bad news. Let's just go there. I'm going to throw one extra in there so you can say today.
Yeah, I'll say like a 3.5.
All right, now that you know,
I had no knowledge of the players.
Right. Now you have good news. So 6, 5, 3.5, and now you have good news.
I'll probably go back to 5.
Yeah, I'm with you all the way through right here. Now, the funniest one of all, he has September 7th, after CJ Carr throws for 300 yards, three touchdowns, the defense gives up 7 points to Wisconsin, and Indy goes 2 for 2 on field goals over 40 yards.
A six? I mean, I don't think Wisconsin's that good, so it's not going to – it would be nice if they won their first game on like they did last year, but I think even with a guy like CJ Carr, I know he can put up those type of numbers against a team I think is – not that adequate, whereas I want to see him do it when they play Miami later in the year. That will give me immense more confidence if he does that type of thing and the defense does as well.
All good answers. I'll put my answers on Monday Musings because those are really good. If you said Notre Dame's chance of going to the semifinal, I'd go a lot higher, but that's different than winning a title because Notre Dame's really good this year. And let's say they avoided Indiana in the quarters. They'd be playing Indiana and Indiana be favored by 3.5 points right now. So that's hard to get to the championship game. If you're playing Miami, you're rematching Miami. Like it would be a hard... Unless you drew Ole Miss, the way Notre Dame would have handled Ole Miss, the way they were playing, you would have had a hard matchup in the semifinals. I firmly believe Notre Dame would have got to the semifinals this year had they been in the playoff.
I agree.
Next question comes from ODB45. The talent but unavailability of Charles Jagusaw has often been discussed on the podcast. Less than a handful of games played, it's been hard to gauge his pro future, much less his best position at Notre Dame. Is Jagusaw talented enough in your eyes that his healthy presence would have changed the outcome of the Miami game due to the fact they could have established a better running game, control the line of scrimmage, and gotten Jeremiah Love involved more? I like this look back question.
I think I'm always hesitant to be like, oh, it would have changed this outcome, and especially since Notre Dame, while it was a 3-point game, they did kind of come back late. But I think if you, presumably, he would have started over Kirby Lambert at right guard, and get Lambert's game, and it's Pro Football Focus, so take this for what it's worth, but his grade was a 2.4. out of 100 pass blocking grade that day. So if you just look at what Carr had to do in his first start in that environment, and now Lambert's not the only one who did poorly. That was also Wagner's and Knapp's worst games of the year too. So that's not the only reason he was dealing with pressure. But if you could just take Lambert out with a player who we saw when he got thrown into right guard during the playoffs last year, and Joe Rudolph was like, he has the potential to be one of the best players in the country at the position based on that one game, then you think that probably does give Carr a little bit more confidence and just let them run the ball at the middle. And they maybe aren't trying to do so much with those like kind of quick out receiver screens because they're not sure what they can get down the, if they'll have time to pass down the field, which we know is a major strength, and run between the tackles. So I think that game could have been different. I'm not saying they definitely win, but I think if there was one injury replacement you could do to make the biggest difference, that would probably be it.
That's a great way of putting it, because I've long said Notre Dame deserved to beat Texas A&M. Miami deserved to beat Notre Dame the way those games went. Not that Notre Dame could not have beaten Miami or A&M, you know, but Notre Dame deserved to beat A&M. I thought Miami was the aggressor and the better team that day. Boy, oh boy, is Charles Jagusaw at his peak, which is, you have to imagine, beyond the Penn State peak since he had 10 days of practice at the position. Yeah. At his peak, is he better than Lambert and Absher? And especially, well, let's just say in that game, I mean, that's all that matters, how they were in that game. Maybe you go in with a more confident game plan. I could see that being a little different, not getting behind to them. I think that's a great game that comes down to a field goal between two of the four best teams in the country. So I go with you, Drew. Jagusaw was the number one dude to add to that game because your offensive line that's good and got better was not good and got overwhelmed. And I just think you could have found something more with him there.
I think the confidence, as you mentioned, that you'd get just going into that game on what you would do, I think could make a significant difference. Our next question is from Frankencow. With 26 being the year, is the staff more willing to scorn younger players on the roster to bring in transfers that can help now?
I don't think they scorn them because I don't think they could retain Dallas Golden and Mark Zachary without bumps in their NIL. The guy that was scorned was a senior, graduating senior, and Josh Burnham, right? Preston Zinter might have been scorned. He's a graduating senior. K.K. Smith probably didn't get enough. He's going to be a senior. Armel Mukum probably didn't get enough when he left. Maybe he got a little more. Maybe he came back for it because he saw the market. He's a senior. I don't think they scorned their younger guys too much. The younger guys that left, I think they wanted to augment over them. You saw them for a year. There's free agency in college football, and you have to make yourself better.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Dallas Golden. He's a guy that they saw better than older players to get into the game last year. You're not going to – usually the younger players that they're going to invest in with resources and playing time, or especially under Marcus Freeman, are the guys that deserve to be out there and bring some sort of upside and stuff like that. So I don't think, I mean, maybe are there times where they've played a guy a little more at the end of the year to kind of encourage him to come back, but maybe, but those are going to not necessarily even be in the most important moments of the season. They just might be sure to get them in the rotation against an Army or something like that in November. So I don't think that's the case. And obviously now with how maybe the portal went, I think that's an even easier question to answer, because they didn't try and break the bank for a guy like Nick March or something like that. So if they had done that, but where we are in the portal, definitely not.
I'm glad you brought up that break of the bank for March thing, because man, you definitely, if you can get Graham, you definitely want Graham and Porter more than Marsh and someone. Does that make sense? I know the someone's undefined. Like if someone becomes Will Pauling, then you have a conversation to have here. But if someone becomes Caleb's, that's not good. I was going to say Caleb Smith, but he was really lower than these guys a couple years ago. If someone becomes Chris Mitchell, I think I like the two Ohio State receivers more than Nick Marsh and Chris Mitchell. I think
I agree.
Yeah.
The upside, and you just have them around longer, and yeah, that's a area where this incoming freshman class, I think you have a lot of high reason to be optimistic on, but that's not a place where they've recruited excellent the prior 2 years, so you kind of are able to supplement that with those two guys in addition to what they could do this year.
Our final question comes from St. Elmo's Sacks. With everyone that has signed to date, so we're going to go just with what we talked about on the podcast, Drew. And besides, you cannot say kicker because that's boring. He says, what single position do you gentlemen believe must be added? Additionally, after that, you could say, what's the want, but not a need?
I mean, I think the want and the need is defensive tackle. I mean, I think even if you get a guy like Francis Brew officially in there, he's not a guy who's going to be, I know, I think he had 20 pressures last year, according to Pro Football Focus. So then it's pretty decent for a guy of the role you might see him fitting. But you don't have that type of Riley Mills or who can get to seven sacks or be really disruptive in that way up the middle. So I think you definitely want a guy who can be reliable and consistent and kind of has that experience that you need. And then if you really want a guy who could be a real force up the middle and would really, with what they have on the edge, coming off the edge, could really make this defensive line one of the top groups in the country if they had a guy who could really penetrate and be disruptive up the middle.
No chance I argue that. You want Brew and you want another defensive tackle. That's the want and the need. I mean, obviously, if you're going to go back in Notre Dame portal lore, a guy like Brew and Chris Smith, no, I want Brew and a guy like Mylon Graham. But you need two defensive tackles to start. I just don't have faith in the NCAA and Jason Onyeka. Onyeka changes some things, but you can't change your portal approach because Onyeka may be granted another year of eligibility by the NCAA. And it's just, and if he comes back, you know what? It's good to have a lot of good defensive tackles. It really is. And I really like Elijah Burris and Micah Gilbert more than I like having to throw in, this is becoming a running joke now, having to rely on RML Mukum and Cole Mullins to become really good players. I think those two receivers with CJ Carr, you could just develop them easier than you can develop the third string defensive lineman.
Yeah, and those are guys who have that kind of NFL upside, day two pick upside coming out, and we don't have again, they come from Ohio State where they have the two best receivers in the country arguably last year on the roster. That's why they haven't played a ton. And both of those receivers, when, for instance, Mylon Graham entered the portal, both took to Twitter to say, no, I forget what his number was, no number five. Like, they were upset. Like, that is the guy they wanted on that roster, two personally as well, even if they were playing over him.
This is not our last podcast of the week, but that is our last question. We'll be back on January 15th. I think there'll be some more portal talk after the portal closes on Friday. We'll probably still be hearing about it on Saturday. Want to remind people, IU and Miami play on Monday. IU and Miami players can go in the portal as well right after that. I think Notre Dame might be in more on some recent losing teams like Oregon for looking for guys to still work on than you would Miami and Indiana. But I just can't even picture Notre Dame going after an Indiana guy right now the way it's all going, because Indiana builds so heavily in the portal and Notre Dame builds so heavily in recruiting and augmenting the portal. But we will find out later next week, Notre Dame's final roster. For Drew Mentok, thanks for joining Irish. I'm Tim O'Malley. Thanks for joining Irish Illustrated Insider. Drew, thanks for coming on and lending a lot of context to this. That was a pleasure.